Good morning, 10 a.m. this Wednesday, time once again for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Shaylen Cochran. This week, I got to sit down with Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Charlie Pierce. He spoke the day after a Chamber of Commerce meeting where he rolled out his plan to close the borough's $4 million budget gap. We'll also talk a bit about last November's contentious runoff elections, how he's adjusting to work in a public rather than private office, and how he does plan to close that budget gap. Now, conspicuously absent in our conversation, you may notice, is talk about the school district budget. That's a conversation in and of itself, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, my conversation with Borough Mayor Charlie Pierce.
I'm always curious when somebody's in a new position like this. It's been about 3 months.
3 months.
Yeah. Has been everything you thought it would be, and a little bit more.
It's been exciting, actually. It's been nonstop, from the the day we arrived. You know, it's a big learning curve. The administrative tasks. You know, I'm accustomed to that. You know, I've spent most of my life, you know, in an office setting and handling a lot of administrative duties and making decisions. I'm very comfortable with making decisions, but I'd have to say that I mentioned it yesterday in the chamber meeting that, you know, there's perceptions. Everybody's got this perception of how things are, and oftentimes it's different when you actually get yourself into the room and you start looking at things in the detail at a very in the weeds, if you will, type view. You come away with a different perspective.
Yeah.
And it's been positive. You know, we've had one of the things that was an important priority for John and I is to come in and build some partnerships and some relationships. Certainly there's that element of, you know, run for the office, you know, and you get into that, and sometimes you get into, I'll say sometimes, unfortunately, we get into the people's personal lives, and, you know, this day and age, it seems to be important to folks before they select someone that they know all the details about an individual, and where I respect that process, you know, I too want to know who I'm voting for. Sometimes those processes of learning who folks are can turn into a less than desirable event.
Yeah,
it certainly did for me.
Yeah.
And my family. You know,
yeah.
it was unnecessary and totally uncalled for. But nevertheless, it occurred, and we've moved. We're way past it now. But so what I would say to those folks out there, if you've got a candidate running for, really you're volunteering. You're putting your putting yourself out there, and you're volunteering for a position, and you're coming in. Certainly, you're compensated, but be careful. You know how you treat people. It's important how we treat people in our lives, and be factual. Be willing to listen, because everybody has a story. Be willing to be receptive to taking the time to listen before you formalize your opinions. And so got all past that, came into the borough building, and I can tell you, so back to that mission of building relationships, and I think it's been very, very important. I talk about those things because of those perceptions that there is, as though they're going to come in, they're going to clean house, man. They're going to wipe, but, you know, they're going to fire, they're going to go through and do a pattern of firing folks and just, you know, make things, you know, less than comfortable around the borough. And, I'm a conservative-minded individual, always have. My whole life I've been conservative. In my own life I've always set boundaries and been a planner and tried to – I planned so that there was some predictability in the outcomes of what my life and what I would experience in my life. And I run the day-to-day business that way too. And I think it's fair to say that folks need to have some – reasonable expectation of what to expect. And so I think that we've been very, very careful, very methodical about the decisions we're making. We'll continue to do that, being mindful that there has been many, many, many years before we ever arrived of contributions made to this process, and those folks that have hung in here and figured out how to do it,
Yeah.
And work hard every day, need to be respected and rewarded for their efforts. And it's you know, every 3 years, if you're in the borough building here and you're working for the Kenai Peninsula Borough, you're subject to getting a new boss. Now, every 6 years for sure, and but we're trying to make that experience as respectful and as and enlightening as we possibly can. And I can say we've had, from what we're getting back, you know, the survey says, and we do take a, we've put some survey boxes in, actually. We've got one,
oh, yeah?
We've got one downstairs, you know, and we get suggestion box, and we're installing one in Seward, and we're going to install one in Homer as well.
Any feedback on those yet?
You know, we're getting some. We've gotten some good ideas that we've come out of there with. You know, they're confidential. People ask for confidentiality, and we have to respect that.
Sure.
But it's a good way to learn maybe the pulse of what's going on. And you certainly want to know. Oftentimes folks are uncomfortable with just sitting down with you and chatting with you and being brutally honest with you. But mm-hmm. It's a way for them to do that and then hopefully maybe see some actions or decisions changed as a result of them sharing their ideas.
Yeah. And talking about folks that have been here for a while, I have to imagine that's got to be one of the bigger challenges for everybody involved, from the mayor's office on down, is as you mentioned, every 3 years and 6 years at a maximum is a fresh set of ideas coming in. And if you're dealing with folks who have built a career out of doing this stuff and they know this stuff inside and out, it's, you know, again, it's what they spent their career doing.
That's right.
There's a lot to learn from that, I'm sure, but there's also there's a lot of opportunity for discussion about new ideas and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we spent the first month, John and I spent the first month sitting down with all the directors, a number of the employees, all the fire chiefs. We've met with a number of the service areas and some of the folks that are on boards in the service areas, and we've had quite a bit of dialogue. We can go to a meeting every night. I mean, we can work on weekends and go to a meeting every night, and we've had some long evenings here just working on the day-to-day business. We ran hard the first 3 months. We have run hard the first 3 months and trying to get it in front of the curve. I mentioned that learning curve. You know, that budget is a large document. Yesterday there was a question asked to me about fish tax, you know, from the state. Does the borough get fish tax? Well, we do. There's some money that's funneled back to the borough in the way of fish tax, and it's not significant. But there are some dollars that are generated and then given back to the borough. You know, the budget document is large. You got the general fund, and then you got the service areas. It's the way the borough has been set up, and you know, back 50 years ago, it worked well. I'm sure it worked well. It was kind of how it was defined and how it was laid out. It was planned. In today's day, as we grow as a peninsula and we grow as a community on the peninsula, it's a large geographical area, as I mentioned. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of pieces. There's smaller service areas that really struggle to try to provide services.
And, oh, yeah.
And think about public safety in Anchor Point or Kisa down in Homer,
mm-hmm.
or Nanilchik, you know, Nanilchik volunteer fire, strictly volunteer community, volunteer type, not a service area. They do it on their own.
Straight volunteers. Yeah,
straight volunteer. They do it on their own. And they provide a reasonable level of care, you know, on, mm-hmm. on a volunteer basis. And it was originally set up that way. And then as we continue to grow and houses continue to be built and infrastructure grow, you know, your infrastructure grows and there's development, there's more roads, there's, you know, we grow, we have these growing pains. And really, when you think about it, if you had an area-wide power, as many boroughs set themselves up with, not service or service areas, but an area-wide power, you could free up some of the time it takes, perhaps, to make decisions, and you could take, and you know, if you include everybody in the mix, maybe the cost per customer or cost per resident on a cost basis might be lower, and you could spread some of those costs. But I think that the service area concept, that parting out, piecing, and holding, being privatized somewhat, it comes at a cost.
Yeah.
And it's expensive to do it that way.
You wonder, you meant, you know, going back, you know, 50 years to the beginning of the borough and how this system made perfect sense then.
Right.
The biggest change has been all the more people, you know, 50,000 people now plus, as opposed, you know, 50,000 more people than there were then.
I'm sure for a long time and it would probably hover around 20,000 people, 19, and, 18, 15, along the way.
And that's that's the whole thing that drives it. And so having it kind of parceled out like that in the different service areas, it makes a lot of sense to be really localized like that at a small population base. Is that something that maybe is a bigger question, but attached to this is – what are some, is that a surprise that you had coming into the mayor's office from your time on the assembly?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. You know, when you really, you really see the mix and you really see the restraints that we create for ourselves.
Right.
You create those boundaries, you know, and you sectionalize yourself and you create divisions, if you will. And you know, if we're, you know, the Kenai Peninsula is an awesome place and it's the potential for the Kenai Peninsula is even greater. I mean, when we really think about the natural resources that we have on the peninsula and the way in which they've been developed, you know, I mentioned I see this bubble that we're sitting on and it can go either way. The bubble can roll either way. And we really don't know where it's going to go. And somebody told me the other day, hope is not a plan, and I liked it. I used it yesterday, and I think it really kind of describes where we're at today. You know, we have all have a lot of hopes and dreams, and yet how do you develop a plan on hope? So what we've done, you know, moving forward in the 3 months is we've been pretty aggressive about learning about what opportunities, areas where we could potentially save and maybe defer, and then make some changes, actual changes. And you know, I ran on the premise that if somebody leaves, before you fill out that requisition or the request to replace them, let's talk about it, and let's look at the department that it's in, and let's see if we can do some consolidation. You know, we took the roads director position, and we merged that, or we're working to. We haven't made any final decisions, but what we're doing is we're moving that position over under maintenance, you know, be forward thinking. Again, we're looking and we're saying as capital projects decline, after we finish our hospital project, what's the next major project that we have on the books to build or to manage? Pretty much, I don't, we're not building any schools. We're not doing any major remodels.
But a lot of maintenance.
We got maintenance.
Yeah.
We got maintenance that we can handle, and there'll be maintenance projects along the way that we'll manage, but not to the extent that we've had with the demand that has been placed on us in managing a large building of a hospital, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some significant construction projects there that needed very close attention and required a number of folks to carry that task out. So as that declines, we have to plan for what the future looks like. So I think looking at taking the two and pulling them together as a one working group, making some consolidation there, and again saving that salary of in a position. And when you look at the leadership that's over there, you've got four roads inspectors, you got four leads in the maintenance department, you got one down in Homer, and you got three in the central area here, and they can report the day to day. I mean, there's a lot of management there. There's a lot of leadership there if you look at it. And they can report back to a director, and that director then can report to the mayor's office. There's no reason why we can't take advantage of that. There's another potential savings that we're looking at, and this is something that is near and dear to me. It's probably one of the most important things that I think I'm charged with is making sure that we have public safety and that it works. I'd have to say that we talked about those islands,
right?
And you've got the you've got all of the fire service areas and the emergency responders that do it their way. I mean, it's their way.
Well, I mean, they're spread all over Hill and Dale. They've figured out what works for them in this little corner and that little pocket. Yeah,
I understand. Yeah. But as you grow as an organization, and again, as I mentioned, our growing pains. You need a better plan.
Yeah.
You just need a better plan. You need to have some organizational structure and leadership that, and top-down leadership to where you have the chiefs reporting to a director or an assistant. You can have a battalion chief or assistant battalion chief. Call it what you want, but you need some direction from top down. And really, it's very inefficient to have every chief report directly to the mayor. Imagine having how many
different reports you get to get. Yeah.
Yeah, and you lose a lot of efficiencies from that. You lose a significant amount of communication that potentially could have some significant cost savings take place that you miss out on. Policies and procedures, safety policies, practices in general, procedures in general, National Fire Code. Are you following National Fire Code on one end of the region versus the other? And you know, in our discussions with the various chiefs, it was very evident that, well, maybe that would happen, maybe that wouldn't happen. And I think in some cases when you're delivering emergency services, you need to ascertain that it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no options in it. You don't wait until the emergency arrives and then try to train on it to deliver the services. And so leadership identifies the responsibility that you have, and it identifies the training that's necessary for the responsibilities that you have, and it works well in the way of developing budgets and formalizing long-range plans and expenditures, long-range current expenditures as well as long-range expenditures. And there's just a lot of planning that goes into all
that. Oh, yeah.
There's an enormous amount of planning that goes into that. And so what we've done, I've got a designee to the my designee as I took Chief Bazin out of the Nikiski.
Right.
And I think that he clearly demonstrates a high level of experience and professionalism. And I'm asking him to take a look at the organization as a whole, and we're going to work over the next 4 to 6 months and come up with a strategy to include the chiefs, include the service area boards, have some discussion, and at the end of the day, I'm hopeful that they'll support the idea of having a different organizational structure in the future for the peninsula. And really what I'm trying to examine and bring some exposure to is the what do we look like today and what do we want to look like 5 years or 10 years or 20 years down the road. We're going to continue to grow, and those growing pains are going to require a significant amount of organizational policy, and right now I think it's fragmented at best. And I like to use the analogy that I'm trying to build some bridges to the islands and bring some common voice amongst all of the service areas. You know, I mentioned the smaller service areas really struggle because of the tax base that they have.
Right.
I want to try to find a way to help them, and so that they can so that they're able to deliver their services at a higher level.
I can hear this debate going on in an assembly meeting already, and
right.
You know, we've got the crowd of regulars who like right. what they've got, and they don't
right.
want it changed, and
right.
they don't want to be under the umbrella right. of the Central Peninsula or this or that. They
right.
like things the way they are. Is that a hard pitch to make to try to bring more things under the umbrella of the borough sort of at large, as opposed to leaving that local control in place?
Certainly a challenge, but I believe it's an achievable challenge. I think once you sit down and we're all honest with each other, we'll see the benefits, because you can use other communities that have gone through similar growing pains and use them as an example. They've learned through a lot of the growing pains that they've gone through, and they've changed too. They've evolved,
mm-hmm.
and their leadership structures have evolved. Look, we got a 50-year-old, we're operating on 50-year-old plans. It's time to take a review, look at what we've done in the past, and look at what potentially we're going to be forced to face in the future, and make sure that we're ready for it.
Yeah.
Succession planning, budget planning, I mentioned it yesterday. It's a big part of the deal. You know, I showed the chart on the board. You could kind of see, and when we were at $25 million in fund balance, just under $25 mm-hmm. million in fund balance, you could kind of see the spending line going, our fund balance being depleted. And it was... I don't know that anybody worried about it. I think it's unfair for me to sit here today and second guess what's happened before.
Sure.
But I can say this, that something was going on to where we did not make decisions to change that line, if you will. And that line on that chart represents spending and decisions related to the spending.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would say is in four-year, five-year forecast on revenue versus expenses and doing some charts of that, long-range plans, we'll do that under my administration. I'll leave a packet to the next mayor, if I'm not your next mayor, so that they can look at it and say, well, look, they've actually done some forecasting, and it won't be one of these deals where we're forecasted to go below our minimums if we had no new revenue. You know, we had an administration that was leaving that was Mr. Navarro was being very honest with us. You're going to have to find some revenue,
mm-hmm.
or you're going to have to come in here and you're going to have to cut.
There's only two ways that the road goes.
You got to do something. Yeah. So he was warning us.
Yeah.
And the solution he had was, and I think this is where the tax base was having some trouble with, is the solutions that were being offered by the assembly as well as the administration. The only solution that you heard was, well, we're going to just go out and tax you some more. And I think that's the problem that I had with it too,
mm-hmm.
was that, you know what, I can deal with new taxes, and I think everybody out there that can. But what they want to see and they want to know is that what did you do to get us to the where you can justify, so that you can justify
mm-hmm.
A new expenditure or a new revenue source, and the only way to get that is through via a tax.
Yeah.
I'm being honest, I've looked at it. We're going to need a new tax, and we need to talk about it and explain it, and so that there's some confidence in that, in the process.
And in your when you were speaking with the chamber, you know, and rolling out this plan, one of the big parts of this plan and getting into the service areas again is this idea that the borough already does a lot of administrative work, a lot of paperwork kind of stuff.
We do.
For the service areas, and
yeah.
And maybe this is just kind of splitting hairs, but in talking about bringing back that administrative fee for those road service areas, that's, again, I can hear a lot of people saying, well, that's going to make my service area fees go up. That's an extra tax.
That's not true. It's not true. What you've got is your mill rates haven't changed. We haven't changed the mill rate. We are going to have a small mill rate adjustment to fix the 20-minute response time in Funny River, and that's going to require some additional staff for response.
Right.
What you want to do in the stations is you want to put a paramedic and a firefighter, EMT, in every station on every shift. So it requires 10 of those individuals on every shift in the central emergency area, CES mm-hmm. area. And right now what you've got is some volunteers that can work on an infrequent basis. You know, volunteers is a big part of they augment the staffing levels of your central emergency services, and we certainly need to do work more. But part of the plan was to do more to incentivize volunteer and work on the volunteer crews, get the training up on volunteer crews so that we can sustain ourselves long term without hiring new firefighters, and then. Incentivize that. So we're looking at doing some incentives, better incentives to encourage folks to stay on a volunteer basis with us. And then, you know, you got a station that's 15 miles, 17 miles out the end of the road. And you don't have a group of individuals living in the Funny River Road area that are willing or have not been willing, not a large pool anyway, that are willing to volunteer. So we've always had a staffing issue with the number of stations. Kasilof was an issue for a time. Sterling is an issue sometimes. K Beach is an issue sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so the way you fix that, you bring in a few more fellas or gals to take care of the day-to-day permit stuff. You improve your volunteer deal, and you change some of the policies as it relates to time off, vacations, and change some of those policies, and it makes it work. But we need to fix the 20-minute response time. It was important to me. I think it's important to the residents that are in the area, and they'll understand it. But looking at general fund budget, I think we can bring it in. We're going to use some of our balance money we have in the land trust fund.
Right.
We've earmarked that, using some of that money to bridge the gap, if you will.
What is that's the big one. That's going to be what closes the majority of the budget gap for this fiscal year.
It is.
That's a one-time thing.
Right. It is.
Yeah. So what happens next year?
Revenue.
Revenue in the form
Well, you've got Mr. Bagley's bed tax. We'll see how far that goes. We've got some other ideas that we're kicking around right now. There's some state statute requirements that we're looking into. We're just making sure that there's some we're checking on the legalities of the process that we want to do. You know, one of the things is with the tax, any tax, you want to make sure it's equitable, it's fair, and it's equitable, and that it's not real burdensome. We're going to try to find a pill that we can all swallow in that. The big thing I'm trying to stay away from is your property. I'm trying to stay away from property taxes. I would have supported the change in the cap from 5 to 1,000.
The sales tax.
Yeah, I would have supported. I voted against it while I was running because I felt like on the principle of no new taxes.
Sure.
I campaigned on no new tax, but I think if there was one that I could ever wrap my arms around and say, as an individual, say, you know, I think it's fair and equitable. I'm kind of a consumer tax kind of guy. I'm not a property tax kind of guy. It wouldn't be great if we could have enough exchange of services and goods that we produced enough sales tax to pay the bills and that we didn't need a property tax, so that when you paid your property off, you actually owned it.
Mm-hmm.
You truly owned it. You owned it. It was yours. And you didn't have a lien against it every year in the way of a tax. Imagine that, having a situation like that.
I'm a public radio reporter. I'm still trying to get to that point of owning my own property.
Well, the deal is it's back to that division problem. There's not enough of us here to divide the cost amongst to pay all the cost of the mm-hmm. services that are delivered here. You know, and that'll be a debate forever. I think in Alaska because of the attraction of it's. It's beautiful to live in Alaska, but it's hard to live in Alaska too. I mean, look at the energy costs that we have as individuals, you know, to heat your home or to fuel your vehicle, and it's just energy costs alone mm-hmm. are very, very high. Material costs are high. Anything you go to store and buy, you try to build a greenhouse or you build a deck, you build anything, that wood's come up on a barge and it's got a transportation component cost to it, and everything just costs more if you're going to live in Alaska.
Yeah. One of the things that you talked about yesterday, and another part that of the budget process that is going to create some savings, you mentioned it was a huge part of your campaign as well, was getting down to brass tacks, sitting down with department heads and really figuring out where's the fat at. Where can we trim the fat?
Right.
What are some examples? How have those conversations gone? Where are some of the things
very productive?
That, yeah,
very productive.
And what are some examples of stuff that?
Well,
that
you have what you have what's known as laps in a lot of the budgets. You know,
were they sort of over budget for just in case, and then that accrues. Right. Yeah.
So guess what? We've made things very tight. Okay, so we've tightened up on laps, you know, and we've left some money in there, contingency,
mm-hmm.
and there's contingency. You want a little bit of contingency in every budget, and we've certainly it boils down to what is your philosophical beliefs about the outcomes, how outcomes happen, you know, probability, what's the likelihood of this really happening, and the best way to get to that when you're developing a budget is the individuals that have managed those budgets year after year after year. I mentioned yesterday I had a staff meeting back 2 months ago, better than 2 months ago, and we had borough employees and staff directors mm-hmm. downstairs, and we visited and we kind of talked about the budget. It was the budget kickoff back in January, and I looked at everybody and I said, you know, it's funny, I'm reading this document and it says the mayor's budget, and yet I'm looking around the room and I really don't feel qualified to produce this budget without you.
Yeah.
So how about we call this our budget? Let's have some equal ownership in this budget.
Yeah.
And I think that there was a significant amount of appreciation in the building here while while giving credit to the individuals that work hard every day to try to do what they do. And I think they really appreciated having the opportunity to sit before John and I and Brandy, finance director, and just talk about it. So, well, no, that's needed because of different circumstances and being able to justify why we're spending what we're spending. And it gave them an opportunity, too, to go through their budgets line by line and just kind of look at it and say, no, it's probably going to be needed, or no, that's not going to be needed. So we found, $180,000 in the first round. And let me say that that's a continuous process, too.
Yeah.
We'll continue to do that, biannually, quarterly. You know, we'll look at how things are going during this next budget year, and we'll continue to talk. It doesn't mean just because we've produced a budget that we're going to.
You use the term moving target.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a moving target.
Yeah.
It's constantly evolving, and, you know, there's things that change along the way. I think the biggest factor that could force discussion would be any individual that retired or decided to leave.
Mm-hmm. Because I feel like maybe the worry there is that from an employee standpoint is, all right, we're creating efficiencies is what you call it, but on some level that's piling a bit more work on the other people's desks, and
yeah,
not necessarily for more pay and more pension either.
I understand.
And that can be kind of tough.
Well, what I try to do is what we make up for is we give out lots of thank yous. You know, we really appreciate what you're doing. You know, you make, I'll tell you, I've learned in my lifetime that if you hand me something to do and you allow me to own it, it's mine. And then you give me the responsibility on it. And then you give me the authority to make decisions as it relates to the things that I own. The outcome is generally very, very positive. And then what you do is you reward. We created this Employee of the Month. That was a John Quick idea.
Mm-hmm.
Employee of the Month. We've had our first one. Michelle downstairs in the clerk's office awarded that. She went in and worked very, very hard on getting the four to six borough logos that were out there floating around on letterhead and business cards, and they consolidated it as a team, and they came up with they branded the borough with a consistent one selection branding of the borough, and it's on all letterheads now. And Michelle headed that up and with her team, and it was a lot of work and effort. And again, it was an example of individuals taking ownership of something and running with it. And so what John and I have done is we've agreed to do a Employee of the Month, and John and or I will reach into our own personal pockets and pick up a $20 gift card from somewhere, buy them some coffee for a few days, and buy them what you can buy with 20 bucks, you can buy what, 3-4 cups of coffee now?
Something like
some
that.
Some of those places.
Yeah, I can get a lot more cups of coffee for 20 bucks because I have no taste in coffee.
Okay, but me neither.
For those
coffee connoisseurs, you know, they can go out and enjoy a little bit. It's a way to say thank you. It's a simple way to say thank you. And again, you get the buy-in. What I really try to exemplify by example is ownership, taking ownership. Safety has been I want to talk about that for a minute. It's
sure.
Safety. You know, we had we had 10 incidents in 2016, 2017 year, and in 2018, 25. So we've gone up significantly with our number of incidents. And so I would suspect that our insurance rates as it relates to workers' comp will follow suit,
mm-hmm.
and those things cost money. An employee that is injured and not able to work leaves a vacancy at work, creates a hardship in the vacancies that they leave at work, and then not to mention that when you're on workers' comp, there's a reduction in wages at home, as well as hardships at home, and then having an employee that's just injured, and it's really an effort we're trying to talk a lot about. Talking more about it at the director level, and I've asked each of the director levels to carry that to their groups. But I can tell you that the safety program's starting right here at the mayor's office, and we're trying to make sure that there's some connection and some ownership in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think as my time evolves here, I'm going to work work on changing some of the practices and policies as it relates to incidents, accident investigation, and then preventable versus non-preventable, and then how, and there needs to be some rewards for those that don't get injured at work and that seem to be able to get here every day, take ownership and responsibility for themselves. But you know, if you're involved in a preventable accident, I mean, accidents happen, but if it's preventable, you know, one of the mindsets might be to drop a letter in your file to remind you that, you know what, it's important. There needs to be consequences that go along with it. And that's the part that's missing is that we talk about the importance of having safety, but there's never any consequence to mm-hmm. it. So
that's, you know, that's interesting. That makes me wonder a little bit about, you know, coming into this role from a business perspective and a big business at that, that's kind of easy. The goal in mind is you're delivering a service, you're making a profit. Pretty easy. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily the goal with government. It's delivering a service, but there's not really a profit motive there. Mm-hmm. Is it? Have you had to do anything different to kind of wrap your brain around a different way of coming at this? How to provide that service, but then what the end goal is, what the purpose is beyond, I get a buck out of this.
Well, it's calling delivering the service at the lowest cost that you possibly can deliver it at. There's all these cost drivers that are constantly pushing the budgets and forcing them to go up, which forces the consumer or the residents in the borough to reach into their pockets and take some of that extra income that they make and deliver it back to pay for the services that are being rendered. And you know, there needs to be, and I haven't identified them, but there will be through that long-range planning and that concession planning, there will be some measures for the services that we deliver that we could set up, and so that we say today we're delivering a service at X number of dollars based on your individual budget by service area, and then you can look at as the years go by and you can see where the costs continue to go up, but you can do some comparisons. You have to have some measures to measure yourself with,
right?
And then the only thing else that I think that really may be missing is that for too long, you know, there's this perception in the private sector that, well, government is just, you know, they're out of touch with the private sector. And I think that's, you could probably pick and choose if you wanted to, some of the sectors in internally that are, that I could agree with that, mm-hmm. but I would say that by and large, and I mentioned this yesterday, that my experience to the folks that I work with and that I've met with and that I've talked with, their heads are down and they're dialed in and they're really kind of paying attention to what's going on. And I see it as they get here early and many of them leave late, and they're very committed and loyal to the cause that they've, or the profession that they've chose to work in. And so I thank you goes a long, long ways with people. And I've always found for myself personally, when I was thanked and I was just told that I was appreciated, that I would go above and beyond. Mm-hmm. I was always willing to go above and beyond, take yeah. that ownership, own what I was doing. But again, I think part of my job as mayor is to make sure that they understand that they have responsibility and the authority to make decisions, and that they shouldn't stand by and wait for somebody to tell them what to do. If you've been in a job for 20 years, I would guess that you probably know what to do, and you shouldn't be sitting back waiting for a supervisor or a boss to tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. You know, that I like that swag, you know. Just do it.
The
just
old Nike thing, yeah.
Yeah, Nike was right about that. There was a message that was being delivered there. Mm-hmm. Is just do it. Hurry up and just do it. You know, I like the slogan, take your time, but hurry up. And it makes a difference, you know. Time, value of money, you know. And you're right, it's a different model. We're trying to save dollars. We're trying to save dollars because I think every dollar we save is a dollar we don't have to collect. I've been saying that around here for the last 3 months. Every dollar we save is a dollar we do not have to go out and collect. Let's try to do that. Work towards that. Let that be something that you can grab a hold of.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of components to all of this.
Yeah.
I'm serious. It's daunting. It is daunting, and it's really hard. I sit back and I try to visualize how we're doing and all of the various components and how we're doing and looking and having this sense of, are we meeting the mark? Are we efficient? Are we being productive with our time? And I sit back and I visualize this kind of stuff, and there's just a lot of parts to move apart, move away. Certainly there's places that I see we can do better.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Yeah.
It's time. It's a place where you plant the seed and you got to water it a lot.
Take a lot of care of things.
That's right.
To stay on that analogy, I guess one of your wanted to talk about one of your gardeners a little bit, John Quick. Unfortunately, had some previous obligations, couldn't join us today, but has been a major addition to your team. And you talked a little bit earlier about rebranding the borough and getting logos on. Anybody who's paid any attention to the borough's Facebook page has noticed a big uptick in activity, and you're giving little videotaped reports about this and that and the budget and these sorts of things. And I guess maybe talk with John's absence, tell us a little bit about your chief of staff and where he comes from and what role he plays in this administration.
Yeah, when I met him, it was he called me and he says, "Hey, I want to go to lunch with you." And, you know, it was during the campaign. And
was just out of the blue?
Yeah, out of the blue. You know, I knew his father-in-law. From the industry. His father worked out north from the industry, and his father-in-law told him, says, "You know, John, he needs some help. You need to reach out to him and offer some help to him." You know, and so I met him for lunch, and we had lunch, and he introduced himself, I still remember how he introduced himself. I said, "Well, tell me a little bit about yourself." He says, "Well, I have a beautiful family. Started with his family, so I have three beautiful kids. I have a beautiful wife, and." He says, "And I have six chickens," you know. So he talked about.
Well, they are part of the family,
right? So he talked about his six chickens, you know. And so he showed me a picture, and the first picture he ever showed me was the one of the school bus where his family's standing in front of the school bus, and they're standing there, a beautiful family, and he's very, very grounded, well educated. Very motivated, very creative. He's that creative side that I don't possess that creativeness. You know, I'm more of the direct one in the scope of things, and he's the balance. And he walks in and he has the ideas that perhaps I would never think about, and I really appreciate that from him. And you know, his demeanor and his way about taking care of businesses is he's serious. He takes a serious calling and to his service and the responsibilities that he has as chief of staff. He's easy to get to know. He reaches out to others. He's approachable, and I wanted that personal touch to the process. I think it's important, and so he compliments me in that way, and he helps me feel more comfortable. And you know, I've always seen myself as very approachable, willing to talk, willing to share opinion, share an opinion, and always willing to agree to disagree or agree, and get along, and you know. But John is going to do very, very well at wherever he goes, whatever he chooses to do. But he has so much to offer, and he's just begun. And I like the analogy that I used yesterday, and it I think it says something. It was kind of a when he said it to me, it was like I had a moment of wow, you know. I'm working with a fourth grader, you know.
That's right. Because a little context, you were talking about taking him to Rotary and showing when you were at the head of that organization.
In 96, I was president of the Kenai Rotary Club, and John walked over to the plaque and he looked. He goes, "Hey, you were president in 96 of this club," and I said, "That's right." And he goes, "I was a fourth grader." And
see, you smile. You don't take offense to that. That's
no,
a good thing.
I don't. I appreciate it. Really, I looked at it and I thought, wow, he really compliments things. Though.
Yeah.
So he's really an asset to the process.
Is there a strategy behind the increased sort of social media activity?
There is.
Yeah.
There certainly is. You know, there was a gentleman that stood up yesterday and asked the question about, you know, how are you gonna sell these ideas? How do you sell these ideas?
Right.
And I think the missing link and perhaps some of the previous administrations is the marketing. Government has a tendency to stay behind the four walls, go to work every day, do a lot of what they do, and they don't spend a whole lot of time talking about what they do. The good, the bad, the ugly. We need to talk about the good as well as the things we can do better. And we shouldn't be shy about it. And I think the public deserves that, and I think they expect that. And so our plan is to do much of what you do. You stand behind a microphone throughout the day to share news and to educate and to inform folks of what's going on and to entertain to some respect. So I would say that what I want to do is try to put a personal face on the services that are being rendered here. And so we've taken some opportunities during our day as we go through our day to experience others and share with others. We take photos, we write stories. John's writes the story, spends a lot of hours late at night, you know, evenings, late evenings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts the story out there.
Yeah.
And he's had some great success with that. And so we hope to continue with that. I hope it makes a difference. I hope we're able to provide more information, keep people better informed.
Mm-hmm.
All too often we form opinions and get ideas and we run with that, our own ideas, not even having confirmation or done a little bit of homework on fact-finding. And, you know, fact-finding takes time. Oftentimes a lot of folks don't have the time to do the fact-finding.
Right.
And so we hope to do much of what you do and get out there in front of them and maybe offset some of those misconceptions and help people just feel better about what's going on. Because,
yeah.
You know, one of the things you started out with this interview is how you feel about things. How do I feel when I came in? And, you know, I had some of those same perceptions. Wow, I've got a lot of work to do. And not that that wasn't a correct perception. It was true. There is a lot of work to be done. But it's the I have some pleasant news to tell you that there's a lot of good stuff going on that we're getting our return on investment with, and some very, very dedicated folks, and you need them. We need them to continue to deliver the services that we're getting. I mean, look at the solid waste facility. I mean, look at the work that goes on over the solid waste, and you know, it's taken for granted. I believe a lot of folks don't really think about, well, that's just trash. But do you really realize what happens to it after you put it in that bag and drop it off one of those collection sites, and the effort that goes into it, and this smart thinking that's going on behind the scenes today to try to develop that trash into something that might generate some revenue for the borough?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of good ideas that are coming out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a study that we're going to try to get implemented, and that's to look at and see what kind of gas reserves we have in our landfill today.
And, yep, I've seen some of those plans.
And try to market some of that gas.
Yeah.
Either by generating electricity or sell it back perhaps to a distribution company.
Yeah. So that's one sort of revenue kind of thing. You mentioned that in the future there's going to be a little bit more done to look at those. I want to, as we kind of close out here, some things that are coming down the pike a little bit sooner, specifically the bed tax has been debated back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And is that something that you think would be a good way to help solve some of this problem?
Well, I didn't co-sponsor it. And we've asked the question a number of times. And I think that we're going to need some revenue. So I'm not going to get in the way of that effort. You know, I will encourage folks to think about it, and we need some revenue. So if that's what the constituency or tax base decides as a fair and equitable way to raise some revenue for the borough, then I support it. I could say that I support it, but we're going to, as we find, I mentioned we're doing some work behind the scenes, looking at the legality of some things, and we're hopeful that some of the thinking that we're working on might come to fruition, and should it happen, I don't know that we'll need a bed tax.
I wonder why that one is so divisive. Is it just because it's got the word tax in it? Because
it's targeted.
Well, it's targeted, but it's targeted largely at people who don't live here.
That's true.
I mean, how many times have you gone to the peninsula and stayed somewhere, paid a hotel motel bed tax?
I understand.
You know?
I understand. I can tell you that there's an industry that's floating into town that wants to bring more floats to town. I would want to encourage them to bring as many ships as they can into the ports of Homer and Seward. And I want to encourage that.
If you're taking the trip of a lifetime, though, are you really going to be bothered by a 6% bed tax?
You know, I guess the people that are running those organizations can probably tell you the markets and the mix. They probably understand the math and the data better than we would because they're experienced at it. And so we have to trust some of their comments or concerns about it. I'm okay with a tourist coming up here and having to pay a bed tax. Where I kind of draw the line with it though is I really think that when you start taxing motorhomes and tents, you're probably taking it a little bit too far. I mean, if I'm in a motorhome and I want to leave my home, you know, in the 2 months of the year where Alaskans can actually get out and go and do something enjoyable, where you got decent weather, where you can sit around a campfire and enjoy your family and build some memories, and then to have a $10 tax on the bed that's in your motor home to park it in some park somewhere, it's a little bit further than I want to go. And then when you start talking about tents, you remember there was an amendment to the last bed tax that mm-hmm. included motorhomes and tents. How far do we go? I mean, where do we start and stop? Let's look at it this way. We have a plan that we've put together that I think will carry us through 2020, 2019, 2020, and it'll give us some time to make some informed decisions as taxpayers. We'll do some marketing along the way. If the legalities of the things that we're looking into pan out, perhaps we won't need a bed tax, but we'll have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. There's some time though. We'll have some time. Mm-hmm. We can, and I appreciate that as an individual to think that, well, we need to be out and talking about it with the various groups and having some come meet the mayor days. And where we can get in front of, give people an opportunity to come and talk to us. And we'll learn from all of those exercises. We'll continue to be on the radio with you and with other stations and Chamber. We're going to get out in Chamber. We're going to go to Seward and Homer real soon and get with their chambers and present the plan. We're open for other invites. If you want to see the administration in the mayor's office, we're open for business. We work for you. We're willing to come to you, and really all you need to do is just call the office and get with Pam, and Pam's got access to our calendars, and she can make it happen.
I can tell you, get in line early because that schedule is full.
It is full. It's full, and it's full. It's a busy place.
It's a busy place.
It's a busy place. It's not boring.
I'm sure it's not boring.
It's fun.
I'm sure it's not. Just the last note kind of on the way out. You mentioned that hope isn't a plan, and I can certainly jive with that. That's very true. You can hope in one hand and you know what in the other and see which one gets filled up first. But looking ahead to 2018, there are some pretty big things on the horizon. Yeah. What are you most, I guess, cautiously, reservedly hopeful for?
Well, I hope that the urea plant opens back up. That would be very favorable news. It'd be a number of good paying jobs mm-hmm. and opportunities for some families to move back into the area and create some tax base for us. We did look at, and we are looking at, we're changing our code to comply with state code. That's just coming out of legal. It'll be at the next assembly meeting for introduction, but we're looking at it so that we can give some tax incentive for perhaps a year or 2 years to the plant should they just make a decision to open. That needs to be approved by the assembly, of course, but we're putting the code in place so that it, should they decide to do something or execute that option, we would have that in our tool bag. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as you're aware, is Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation is working on a big in-state project, and we would love to have that. Uh-huh. And
that'd be a big shot in the arm.
Big shot in the arm. Big opportunity for Alaska. A big opportunity for families in Alaska to perhaps educate your children here and then have opportunities for them to stay here after they're educated and raise their families, so that parents can stay with their kids and their grandkids, and you could have a few generations here. And, you know, it's funny. There's interesting about Alaska. Well, where are you from? Well, everybody's from somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
You know, they seem to be from somewhere else. Where do your kids live? Well, they live one here, one there. They're all spread out, and they tend to leave and go somewhere else. And that's heavy. That's heavy on my heart, and I'm sure it is on many others as well. But we need to do our best as the Kenai Peninsula, and representing the interest of the Kenai Peninsula, to acquire better business decisions and better conditions for folks to work. Whether you're in tourism and or fishing, the fishing industry needs a considerable amount of representation and help. And then the oil and gas industry, you know, there's a huge opportunity for us on the peninsula, and we need to be selfish. It's time to be selfish and be stingy about this stuff, and brag about what we can offer.
All right, very good. That's pretty much all the time we got, Charlie. Thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
I appreciate your time.